Have you ever noticed how many unnecessary chemicals are in your cleaning products? When I started looking into what I was actually using around my home, I realized that my laundry detergent was one of the worst offenders. So many popular brands are packed with harsh chemicals that can irritate your skin, mess up your hormones, and cause allergic reactions. But I don't want all of that, so I switched to EarthBreeze. Their detergent sheets are free from harsh chemicals like optical brighteners, dyes, parabens, phosphates, and preservatives. Plus, they don't come in those heavy plastic jugs. It's no mess and no mystery ingredients. Just a lightweight, pre-measured sheet that dissolves in the wash and gets the job done. And yes, your clothes still come out clean, fresh, and soft. So if you're looking for a powerful clean without harsh chemicals, try EarthBreeze. It's easy to switch. And if you're not completely satisfied, they have an amazing money-back guarantee. Right now, you can try EarthBreeze for up to 40% off plus 4 free gifts at earthbreeze.com/ATTWG. That's earthbreeze.com/ATTWG for 40% off plus 4 free gifts. As the air turns crisp and the holidays draw near, comfort becomes the best gift of all. Quince delivers layers that last, sweaters, outerwear, and everyday essentials that feel luxurious, look timeless, and make holiday dressing and gifting effortless. Quince has it all, $50 Mongolian cashmere sweaters made for everyday wear, denim that never goes out of style, silk tops and skirts that add polish, and down outerwear built to take on the season. It's perfect for gifting or upgrading your own wardrobe. And we recently upgraded our wardrobes with Quince.
We did. I ordered a cashmere quarter zip sweater, and it is so soft. I love it.
Yeah, and you got a lot of compliments.
I did.
I also ordered cashmere. I got this short-sleeved sweater that was super cute, and I paired it with wide-leg jeans that I also got from Quince. So I got a whole outfit.
You did, and you looked so good in it.
Thank you. Step into the holiday season with layers made to feel good, look polished, and last. From Quince. Perfect for gifting or keeping for yourself. Go to quince.com/ATTWG for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada, too. That's quince.com/ATTWG to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/ATTWG.
Okay, you're gonna freak out at this deal. Chatbooks is giving you 12 monthly mini photo books for just $12, plus free shipping. It's the easiest way to finally do something with all those photos on your phone. Finally. No stress, no hassle, just memories made easy. Go to chatbooks.com/get12. That's chatbooks.com/get12 before this deal disappears.
Darkcast Network. Welcome to the dark side of podcasting.
On July 6, 1983, 18-year-old Tammy Lynn Leppert left her home in Rockledge, Florida, with a friend for what was supposed to be a fun day at the beach. Tammy was a budding actress who had landed small roles in movies like Scarface and Spring Break. But in the weeks leading up to that summer day, she had been acting strangely. She told her mother that she'd seen something awful and even feared that someone was trying to kill her. That afternoon, she got into an argument with her friend, and he dropped Tammy off alone near Cocoa Beach's landmark Glass Bank building. She made a few urgent phone calls from a nearby payphone and then vanished without a trace. Decades have passed without any sign of the teenager. What happened to Tammy Lynn Leppert? When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell the stories of those who never came home. Today, I want to tell you the story of Tammy Lynn Leppert. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone. Welcome back, everyone.
Welcome back.
Thank you for joining us once again. I'm Kona.
And I'm Ethan.
And we're the husband and wife team behind this podcast. Each week, I tell you the story of an unsolved missing persons case. Ethan doesn't know anything about the case going into the episode and is here to provide his reactions and questions in real time, hopefully asking some of the same ones you have at home. This story is one that's been kind of on my radar for a while. Tammy was young, talented, and according to some, on the cusp of stardom, and then she disappeared. It's one of those stories, though, that seems to have endless possibilities. So I'm curious to get your take on it. Because I think I have a theory, but like I could be easily persuaded, you know?
Okay.
I don't feel very confident in it.
All right. Well, you've piqued my curiosity for sure.
Yeah.
Also, shout out to one of our fans who has the same last name. Probably not related, though.
I know, but it's funny because I talk in this episode about how this was an Unsolved Mysteries episode. And it was actually the season 5 premiere.
Ooh.
Robert Stack called her Tammy Lynn Liepert.
Ah.
And I was like, that can't be right. Because it's definitely spelled Leopard. And then everything else I saw pronounced it Leopard.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to chalk that up to just Robert Stack doing his own thing.
Yeah, I mean, he probably didn't even read the script at that point. I mean, you said season 5. Mm-hmm. He was probably just reading off a teleprompter at that point.
Yeah, and just was going for it.
Yeah, and who's going to correct Robert Stack?
Nobody, and that's what I love. So, you know, if he says it's Liepert, but I am going to go with Leopert for this episode. Before we get started, we want to take a moment to thank our amazing Patreon supporters, Danny B., Alicia A., Stephen L., Aaron, Sarah S., Amelia R., Kristen M., and Riley S. We are so grateful for your support.
Thank you all so much.
If you'd like to join them, you can head over to our Patreon and sign up at any level, and you'll get access to ad-free episodes and a free copy of the ebook that I wrote.
Can we re-emphasize ad-free episodes?
Ad-free episodes starting at just $2 a month.
So stop with the reviews.
Now, with that out of the way, let's get into the disappearance of Tammy Lynn Leopert. Tammy Lynn Leopert was born on February 5th, 1965 in Rockledge, Florida. She was the youngest of 5 children and grew up with her mother, Linda Curtis, who was a theatrical and modeling agent. From a very early age, Tammy seemed destined for the spotlight. She entered her first beauty contest at the age of 4 and went on to compete in over 400 pageants.
Well, I mean, certainly easy to get into that many when your mom is the talent agent.
Well, yeah, but I think she became the talent agent to represent her daughter.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, like all right. I don't think she was established before that. But what's crazier is that she won about 280 crowns.
Wow.
So it's like not only a wild success rate, but just I did not know there were that many pageants in general. Like, isn't that crazy that by the time she was a teenager, so she started at 4 and she did them, I don't know when she stopped, but let's just say like, I mean, she disappeared when she was 18. So at most 14 years, you can do 400 pageants?
I guess. I don't know anything about the child pageant world.
I just think that's absolutely fascinating. So yeah, she was a big deal in the pageant world. And she was such a star early on that a local newspaper once dubbed her Brevard's answer to Shirley Temple.
Mm.
And Brevard is Brevard County. County where yeah. she lived. But yeah, she was definitely a local celebrity. Linda Curtis devoted herself to managing Tammy's blossoming career. She wasn't just a pageant queen. Tammy also did some modeling and even graced the cover of CoverGirl magazine in October 1978 when she was 13. By her mid-teens, she began landing small roles in movies. She was a party girl in the teen film Little Darlings and a bikini contestant in the comedy Spring Break. Now, these, of course, weren't, you know, high art or anything like that. But even though she had like small parts, her body, like her hips specifically, ended up being the movie poster for Spring Break.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. So like that's a huge deal.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah. But her most notable role, and why people listening may have heard of her because this is kind of always brought up, was a brief appearance in Scarface.
I've seen Scarface many times, so I'm curious.
It's a blink of, and you'll miss her kind of role. Like, she doesn't have any lines. Okay. Basically, it's the chainsaw scene, and she is a blonde in a blue bikini who leans into the car and acts as a distraction during it.
Interesting.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, it was obviously a bit role, but it was in a major film. So, you know, it was a step up. It opened up new doors, new possibilities, everything.
Yeah.
Tammy had big dreams of moving to Hollywood and becoming a star, and by 1983, it looked like she was on her way. So that summer, Tammy was 18, and by then, she was the only child who was still living with Linda. Linda sometimes took in other young people who were involved in show business. One such person was a guy named Wing Flanagan.
What?
Yeah, which is just an amazing name.
I mean, that's got to be a stage name, right?
I have no idea.
That's, Wing Flanagan?
Yeah, but he was also in Unsolved Mysteries. He was interviewed, and he's a character. And yeah, Wing Flanagan. So Wing was 11 when he started living with them. So he was more like a younger brother figure to Tammy. Mm. And the two definitely had like a sibling kind of relationship.
Gotcha.
So by all accounts, Tammy was a happy, outgoing girl. Linda described her daughter as someone who, quote, woke up with a smile and went to bed with a smile, end quote. But in the summer of 1982, Tammy started to change, and it had everyone around her worried. That year, after filming wrapped on spring break, Tammy attended a weekend party by herself out of town. Now, no one knows exactly what happened at this party, but according to Wing, Tammy, quote, came back a different person, end quote. The bubbly and extroverted teen returned home sullen, withdrawn, and deeply shaken. Wing would ask her something was wrong, and Tammy would be evasive. She'd change the subject or insist that nothing was bothering her and then try to laugh it off. But something had clearly rattled her. Over time, Tammy also began to become increasingly paranoid. At one point, she said to her mom, quote, Mom, what would you say if I told you someone was trying to kill me? End quote. Linda, of course, asked Tammy for more information.
Is someone trying to kill you?
Yeah, right? But Tammy refused to say anything specific. But on another occasion, she told her mom that she had seen something really awful that she wasn't supposed to have seen. In the Unsolved Mysteries episode that I mentioned earlier, Wing told a story of how the phone rang one day and Tammy told him to answer it and tell whoever was calling that she wasn't there. So Wing did it and, you know, he thought it was weird. Like, she was just being super intense about it, I guess. Like, the impression that I got was that it wasn't like, oh, this guy's calling me who I'm not interested. Just tell him I'm not home. Like, it seemed like it was more than that, you know?
Yeah.
In another incident, Tammy pulled Wing over to a window and pointed out a new van that was parked across the street. The van had like mirrored reflective windows, and she whispered to Wing, look, they can see us, but we can't see them. She was convinced that someone was spying on her.
Creepy.
As weeks went by, Tammy's fear and anxiety seemed to grow, but you know, she still pushed ahead with her acting ambitions. In March 1983, she got the opportunity to film the small part in Scarface, which was shooting down in Miami. She went there and stayed with a family friend, Walter Leibowitz, during production. For the first few days, everything was fine, but then there was a scene with an execution that used fake blood, and it triggered Tammy in a major way. She suddenly broke down on set, crying hysterically to the point that the crew had to take her and put her in a trailer because she couldn't calm down.
Wow.
Yeah. And she had a bit part. Like, you know, she did not have her own trailer. Like, right. They put her in somebody's trailer because she was, like, hysterical.
I feel like I need to, like, IMDb Scarface and see if that, like, pops up in the trivia.
Oh, I think it does. Yeah. It pops up a lot. Walter Leibowitz rushed to check on her and found Tammy in what he described as, quote, a tremendous state of fear and anxiety, end quote. She was shaking and sobbing. In the midst of this panic, Tammy said something about money laundering and kept repeating that they were going to kill her and she didn't know where to hide. Walter had no idea what could have caused her to be so afraid. So from his perspective, her fear was very real and extremely intense, but he didn't know if what she was afraid of was real or if she was like having some sort of mental breakdown.
Yeah.
He was so concerned that he called Linda and urged her to get Tammy professional help. He told her that she should take Tammy to see a doctor and also go to the police to figure out if this was like all psychological or if Tammy actually had something she needed to be worried about. After Tammy returned home to Rockledge, Linda arranged for her to speak with a Brevard County Sheriff's deputy about her fears. However, when the officer came to talk to Tammy, she downplayed the situation. She never mentioned that she felt that her life was in danger, and the conversation didn't really reveal much of anything that police could work with. Maybe Tammy was too scared to tell the police what she thought was happening, or perhaps by that point she was unsure what was real. In any case, her erratic behavior continued. Tammy became extremely cautious about what she ate or drank. According to Linda, she was convinced that somebody was trying to poison her. She would refuse any food or drink from open containers and even made other people like Wings sample her food first. Which like,
sacrifice
so we're just going to kill Wing?
Yeah.
Some days, Tammy would seem almost normal, but other days she was jumpy, edgy, and looked, as Wing put it, like a wild, scared version of herself. Things continued in that vein until they came to a head on July 1st, 1983. That day, Tammy was at home with Wing. According to him, he was sitting on the couch reading when Tammy suddenly accused him of staring at her. He hadn't been, and he denied it, but Tammy grew agitated. She stepped outside, but almost immediately she tried to come back in, only to find that the front door had blown shut and had locked behind her.
Oh, no.
Unable to get back inside, Tammy began to panic. She pounded on the door, yelling to be let in. And when that didn't work quickly enough, she grabbed a baseball bat and smashed a window to reach the lock and let herself in. Wing opened the door and told her to stop, but Tammy was in a frenzy. She actually lunged at Wing and attacked him with her fists, screaming and accusing him of deliberately locking her out.
And how old was Wing at this point?
I'm not sure. I mean, she was 18, so he was probably like 14, I think.
Jeez.
Yeah.
That's got to be terrifying for him.
I know. Wing later said that Tammy's eyes had a crazy look, and he wasn't even sure that she recognized him in that moment. Linda ran in to intervene, desperately repeating, "Tammy, it's mother, I love you," over and over until Tammy seemed to snap back to reality and calm down. Now, as you can imagine, this outburst was very alarming to Linda. So that same day, she brought Tammy to the Brevard County Mental Health Center, where they put her on a 72-hour psychiatric hold. Doctors ran a full battery of tests, and through that, we learned that drugs were not the cause of all of this. They found no evidence of drug or alcohol use, which backs up what friends have said about Tammy. They said that she wasn't into drugs and that she didn't even drink. But somewhat frustratingly, doctors weren't able to diagnose Tammy with any clear mental illness or condition in those 3 days. So at the end of 72 hours, with no firm answers about what was wrong, Tammy was released back home on July 4th, 1983. Tammy's family still didn't know what had caused her drastic change in behavior. Was it a psychological break, possibly the onset of a mental illness like schizophrenia? Or was Tammy truly terrified for legitimate reasons, having seen or heard something that put her life in danger? We still don't know.
It seems as though it was the third option. You know, she goes to that party and then comes back changed and then starts having all of these episodes. And
right.
So clearly she saw something.
Yeah. Something happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd be curious. You said that they didn't find any evidence of drug use, but that party happened however long ago. Most drugs only stay in your system for 72 hours. Most hard drugs, I should say.
Right.
So like, had she taken any drugs at that party, it all would have been out of her system by then.
Oh, for sure. But what that proved was that there wasn't ongoing drug use,
yeah,
or there wasn't drug use that directly, you know, was contributing to these outbursts or anything like that.
Yeah.
You're right. I mean, she very much could have taken drugs at the party. She could have been slipped drugs at the party. I mean,
that's more of what I was thinking.
Exactly. Like, we have no idea. I just think that, you know, some people may want to write off this behavior as like drug induced paranoia or something like that.
And it wasn't.
It definitely does not seem like that is the case at all. So what we do know is that even after her short hospital stay, Tammy remained on edge. Linda later said that upon coming home, Tammy asked Linda to promise that if anything happens to me, get even with that person for me.
Mm.
Linda, of course, tried to ask more questions like, who is that person? What do you think's going to happen? But Tammy still wouldn't say. She just told her, he is still going to try and kill me. Now, at one point, Tammy did mention to her mom that a friend of hers had bragged about a big drug and money laundering scheme going on in the area involving some prominent local figures. So one interpretation is that Tammy thought that this friend or the people involved in that criminal scheme might come after her since she knew too much. And again, like, this is not confirmed, of course, but it's something to keep in mind as we go on. On July 5th, 1983, the day after Tammy got out of the hospital, she spent time with her close friend, Rick Adams. Now, Rick was perhaps one of the last people, aside from family, to really talk with Tammy before she disappeared. Now, Rick and Tammy had been friends for years, and he too was aware that something had been troubling her. In fact, earlier on, Tammy had also told Rick that she believed somebody was going to kill her. So, like, he was well aware of everything that had been going on with her. So that day on the 5th, when they were hanging out, Tammy broke down to Rick and repeated that she had seen something that she shouldn't have seen. Now, she still wouldn't tell Rick exactly what it was, but she was clearly very upset. Tammy asked Rick to take her to church, so they went to a local evangelical temple in Rockledge to pray. While they were there, Tammy burst into tears and cried inconsolably for several minutes. The way he described it, he said, like, she cried harder than he's ever seen anyone cry. Rick did his best to comfort her, and when he drove Tammy home afterward, they actually made plans to go back to church together the next day. As Tammy got out of Rick's car, she told him that she loved him and then said that she might be going away for a while. Now, Rick didn't know what she meant by that, but at the time, he assumed that she was talking about an upcoming trip to California for movie roles. But obviously, looking back, he wonders if maybe she meant something completely different. The next morning, July 6, 1983, Linda said that Tammy seemed calmer and more like her old self. She also said that it was a very normal morning. Linda began to think that maybe the worst was behind them. In fact, she actually thought that Tammy might have been purposely acting extraordinarily normal that day, as if she was trying to reassure her mom that she was okay now.
Okay.
Around 11 a.m., Tammy decided to go out with another friend of hers, 20-year-old Keith Roberts. Tammy told her mom that she and Keith were going to spend the day in Cocoa Beach, which was a favorite hangout spot of hers. Cocoa Beach is only about a 20-minute drive from their home in Rockledge, and Tammy loved it there. She once said, quote, ever since I was a little girl, I've always dreamed of having a house on Cocoa Beach and living happily ever after, end quote. Tammy got dressed to go out. She put on a light blue denim shirt with flower appliques on the shoulders, a matching denim skirt, and flip-flops. She grabbed her gray purse and headed for the door. Linda did, however, notice one odd detail. Tammy left without combing her hair, which is very unlike her. Tammy was usually meticulous about her appearance, so Linda found it strange that she'd rush out with messy hair. In fact, Tammy's friend Rick said that it was one of the things about her that drove him crazy. Tammy took forever to get ready and wouldn't go anywhere unless she looked perfect. As Tammy went out the front door, she called back to her mom, quote, bye, mommy, I'll see you in a little bit, end quote. And those were the last words that Linda ever heard her daughter say. She would later say that she watched Tammy get into Keith's car and she felt a sudden gut feeling of dread. For some reason, she felt that it might be the last time she would ever see Tammy. And tragically, that intuition turned out to be true. Look, teaching your kids about money is hard, especially when you didn't really grow up knowing about money yourself, like me. And that's why I love Acorns Early. They make it so easy for us. And they know that you have a lot on your plate, so they help you teach your kids about money one small step at a time. Our youngest has been using it, and he loves logging into the app himself and checking his balance and figuring out what he wants to spend his money on and what he wants to save up for. And it's so important to start building your kids' money skills early. With Acorns Early, they can learn by doing and watch as the small steps they take today grow into big potential for tomorrow. Kids can earn money with the in-app chores tracker, practice real-life budgeting with automatic allowances, and even set their own saving goals. Ready to join over 1.2 million parents and kids who've unlocked their kids' potential with Acorns Early? Get your first month on us when you head to acornsearly.com/ATTWG or download the Acorns Early app. That's 1 month free when you sign up at acornsearly.com/ATTWG.
Acorns Early Card is issued by Community Federal Savings Bank, member FDIC, pursuant to license by MasterCard International. Free trial for new subscribers only. Subscription fee starting from $5 per month unless canceled. Terms apply at acorns.com/early terms.
Have you ever had a gut feeling about someone and ignored it? In the thriller Ask for Andrea by Noelle W. Eiley, that feeling could be the difference between life and death, and it may also be a message from the other side. So Ethan read this book even before I did and has a lot to say about it.
Cover to cover, I could not put this book down. It is such a page turner. It is an intense read. It takes you from one point of view to another and culminates in a very intense finish that keeps you on the edge the entire time.
So basically, it's three women were murdered by the same man, and they unite in the afterlife to stop him from killing again in a domestic thriller that meets The Lovely Bones. If you've ever screamed at a true crime doc, why didn't anyone listen?
This is the book to read for that.
Ask for Andrea by Noelle Eiley. Did you know that iron deficiency is one of the most common, yet often overlooked, nutritional gaps affecting 1 in 3 adults, especially women? I'm a lifelong vegetarian, and so getting enough iron has been a constant struggle. There are plenty of times when I tried to give blood and I couldn't because my iron was too low, especially in my 20s when my diet consisted of mostly pasta. So I have had to take iron supplements at various times in my life. So when Siderol from PharmaNutra wanted to advertise with us, it was a no-brainer. It's a premium iron supplement powered by patented sucrosomial technology, which helps your body absorb 3 to 4 times more iron while avoiding the common side effects of traditional iron supplements like nausea and constipation. It's vegan and gluten-free and 100% allergen-free and free from artificial colorants. So if you feel like no matter how much you rest, you're still running on empty, you're not alone. Over 2 million people have already discovered Siderol, and it could be the support you've been looking for. So head to PharmaNutra-US.com and use code ATTWG for 10% off your first order of Siderol. That's PharmaNutra-US.com, promo code ATTWG for 10% off today.
So up to this point, I was thinking that maybe Tammy was overacting the day before because she was planning on running away to escape whoever might be after her, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. You mean overacting like when she was at the church?
No. Overacting with her mom.
Oh, like, with her mom when she was like, everything's good,
yeah,
I'm fine.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
And I was thinking that you know, after she said goodbye to her friend saying you won't see me for a while, that maybe she was planning on disappearing to avoid whoever was after her.
Okay.
The hair thing is throwing me off, though.
It's a weird detail and I don't know what to make of it.
Yeah, same.
Because she was dressed nicely.
Yeah.
Like, that's why I described her outfit, you know?
very 80s outfit, though.
Oh, yeah, yeah, right.
Denim skirt.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the hair being messy, now it's thrown me for a loop and making me think another mental health issue or potentially a psychotic break of some sort. But,
yeah,
like, it doesn't seem, and I'm sure you'll go into it, it doesn't seem like her behavior was the same as, like, her kind of manic episodes.
Right, yeah.
So,
yeah,
what was with the hair?
I don't know. Because, yeah, like, all morning, apparently, it was uneventful. She was acting completely fine. But, yeah, so, like, why would she be acting completely fine? Get dressed, look nice, you know, make plans, and then not brush her hair. Like, that's so strange.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm gonna have to think on this as the story progresses.
Well, it gets weirder, you know? Like, there's more to it, obviously. So what happened next, though, comes only from Keith Roberts' account, since he was the last known person to be with Tammy. According to Keith, he picked her up from her house and they headed toward Cocoa Beach in his car. Sometime around early afternoon, they started arguing while they were driving. Keith later told police that Tammy had been acting real paranoid and talked about wanting to leave home. He claimed that Tammy asked to borrow $300 and wanted him to drive her down to Fort Lauderdale to stay with some friends. Now, Fort Lauderdale is over 170 miles south of Cocoa Beach, which is not just a short trip.
Yeah.
Now, it sounds, and I, of course, I can't verify this, but I do believe that Keith said he gave her the money, but said, listen, I can't drive you to Fort Lauderdale in the middle of the day.
If we are to believe Keith, that does back up my thought that she was planning on disappearing for a little bit.
Yeah, exactly.
Still doesn't explain the hair.
No. But this whole thing about him refusing to drive her to Fort Lauderdale apparently set Tammy off. According to Keith, she became irrationally upset and demanded that he stop the car and let her out immediately. So Keith says that he complied. And sometime around 3 p.m. that afternoon, he pulled over a few blocks away from the glass bank in Cocoa Beach and let Tammy out of the car. The glass bank was a distinctive multi-story building along State Road A1A. It was a local landmark, and right next to it was an Exxon gas station and, like, a strip mall. This spot was roughly 5 miles from Tammy's home, just to give you an idea of where we were. Keith then drove away, leaving Tammy there, and according to him, he never saw her again. Now, this is fishy, obviously. Like, I never trust it when somebody says, oh, yeah, I got into a fight with this person, but they were fine. They just happened to disappear.
Yeah.
Right afterwards. Right there. And were never seen again. Because he's certainly not the first person in a story that we've covered to have a story that's similar to that, right? But in this case, we have some evidence that corroborates his story.
I was going to ask.
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking about a gas station and a famous landmark. Yes, it's 1983.
Yes.
But cameras did exist.
Yeah, and I've heard rumors of CCTV, but I don't know if there actually is any in this case.
Oh, okay. So what was the evidence then?
Well, the evidence is that almost immediately after Keith dropped her off, Tammy used a nearby payphone, I think the one at the gas station, to make a series of phone calls. She made 3 calls in quick succession to her aunt, Ginger Kolsch, who owned a costume shop in Cocoa Beach. Unfortunately, Ginger was out of town, so she didn't pick up. Tammy left urgent messages for Aunt Ginger asking her to call back. She said it was important.
Okay, well, I mean, so that does kind of corroborate his story.
Yeah, at least like the timeline, you know?
Right.
Tammy also placed a call to her friend Ron Abeles, who owned a nearby video store on A1A. Ron, unfortunately, also wasn't available to answer when Tammy called. So it seems that within a short span, Tammy was desperately trying to reach someone she trusted who could possibly come get her or help her. And these are people who had businesses close to where she was at the time. So it seems like that's why she chose those 2 particular people to call.
Yeah. As opposed to her mom.
Right. And, you know, I don't know how Linda's health was at the time. I know later on her health failed drastically and she had trouble walking and things like that. So I don't know how her health was at this point. I don't know if she was driving, if she was even in a position where she could have come to get Tammy. So it could have been purely logistical that, like, she didn't even bother to call her mom because maybe her mom wasn't even able to help. So she was just trying people who are nearby. And Ginger would later say, quote, "Tammy was definitely afraid of somebody," end quote. That was her impression upon hearing that Tammy had tried so hard to reach her. Now, we don't know if something specific spooked Tammy in those moments after Keith drove off, or if her general fearfulness was at a peak, but it's clear that Tammy did not want to be alone and was scared of someone or something. Despite those urgent calls, Tammy unfortunately did not manage to connect with anyone. And after that, Tammy Lynn Leppert seemingly vanished. No one who knew her saw or heard from her again after roughly 3 p.m. on July 6, 1983. When night fell and Tammy still hadn't returned home or contacted her family, Linda knew that something was very wrong. Tammy had promised to be back in a little bit, and she was typically good about checking in. In the early morning hours of July 7th, Linda contacted the Cocoa Beach Police Department to report her daughter missing. Now, I'm assuming that that July 7th date is correct. I mean, it does make sense after all. Like, we know Linda was already concerned about Tammy, so if she didn't come home, it would make sense that she would report her missing the next morning.
Right.
But I have seen the police report, which is 2 pages long and has almost no information on it, and it's dated July 11th.
Oh, that's a big difference.
Right. Now, I haven't found a definitive explanation for the discrepancy in my research, but based on everything we know about how cases like this are handled, my guess...
He's an adult.
Yeah.
She can be out on her own.
Exactly.
Call back and... 48 hours and
yeah.
If she hasn't come home, then we'll, yeah.
Yeah, so it sounds like that's exactly what happened. My guess is that Linda did call police on July 7th, but they just didn't do an actual report until the 11th.
Yeah, that would make sense.
And this is borne out by the fact that we do know Cocoa Beach police initially classified Tammy as a possible runaway. Now, in their defense, there were a few reasons why they leaned toward that theory.
I mean, that was my theory already.
Well, exactly, right? And in their case, a few of Tammy's close friends, when interviewed, mentioned that Tammy had been having conflicts at home. There were rumors that Tammy and her mom, Linda, argued about Tammy's career and independence. In fact, one friend recalled Tammy saying, "Man, when I hit 18, I'm out of here." Now, if that's true, it could indicate that Tammy had at least talked about leaving home on her own terms. Another friend, Ronna Bellis, the video store owner that Tammy had tried to call, told a reporter that when he first heard Tammy was missing, he said, quote, "I wasn't too surprised. I remember Linda as being very, well, how should I put this, aggressive about Tammy's acting career. I always wondered if there were problems there," end quote. Now, with that said, Linda has insisted that Tammy would never have left without staying in touch. She always let Linda know where she was going and would call if she was late. Aunt Ginger put it this way, quote, "The only way Tammy wouldn't call Linda is if something bad happened to her or if she was under someone else's control," end quote. Plus, as Linda pointed out on Unsolved Mysteries, Tammy already had plans to go to California for 3 months.
Right. So how unsupportive was her mom, really?
Well, yeah. And if she just wanted to get away from her mom, like, she was already going to be getting away from her mom.
Just go to California.
Literally across the country. You cannot get further away, really, in America than Florida to California, you know? So, like, it was fine. She could have just gone. She didn't need to do this whole vanishing act.
Unless she was running away from somebody else.
Right. And then, of course, there's the fact that Tammy left everything behind. All of her clothes, makeup, and her personal items. She even left $20,000 in her bank account.
And her hairbrush.
And her hairbrush. But 20 grand in 1983?
Yeah, that's a lot of money.
That's a shitload of money. Now, and if you're going to start a new life, It seems like you would want that.
But she did have her purse, because you said that she walked out with her purse.
She had her purse, but I mean, her bank account was never used or whatever. And she asked Keith to borrow $300.
Maybe she was thinking that if she had accessed that money, it would have been traceable.
Yeah, I mean, sure. But it's still wild. And keep in mind, this girl's 18 years old, too, you know?
Yeah.
So despite the family's pleas, police did not launch an intensive search. They did take a missing persons report and spoke to Keith Roberts and other friends. However, by all accounts, Keith was not interrogated. He was more questioned in a cursory way, despite being the last person with Tammy and him admitting that they had had an argument right before her disappearance.
Yeah, I mean, he should have been suspect number one.
For sure. Oh, and also her other friend, Rick, the one who she was with the night before, he said that police never talked to him, despite the fact that they were together the night before she disappeared.
Yeah, this does not sound like they're taking this seriously.
Not at all. Cocoa Beach police have said that Keith cooperated and that they found no evidence to implicate him. However, Linda strongly disagreed. She said over the years that she felt the police blew the investigation early on by not treating Keith as a serious suspect. According to Lieutenant Jim Scraggs, the original detective assigned to Tammy's case, Keith spoke to them only by phone. Scraggs said that Keith actually broke two appointments to come down to the station for a face-to-face interview. So it appears that Keith avoided meeting with police in person, which is, you know, a little suspicious.
That's not the best look.
Scraggs never got the chance to interview Keith properly. After a couple of phone conversations, Keith basically ghosted the investigators. But still, the police publicly stated that Keith Roberts was not considered a suspect due to lack of evidence. So, like, they essentially just took his story at face value.
Yeah, I mean, even with the phone calls that she made, yes, that corroborates his timeline.
Right.
But, unless he presented some sort of alibi, you know, almost immediately after dropping her off.
It doesn't mean that he didn't circle back.
Right, he could have come back.
For sure. So, yeah, I mean, it was so strange to me that they're just like, oh, okay, well, if you said you didn't do anything, like, all right. Now, for his part, Keith later spoke to the media to defend himself. He claimed that he had never been asked to take a polygraph and that he was never invited to the station for an interview, which does contradict the detective's account. Keith said that he did everything the police asked and that he was fully cooperative. What did happen in the early investigation was something rather bizarre. Mystery phone calls. Within the first couple of weeks after Tammy disappeared, Cocoa Beach Detective Harold Lewis received two separate phone calls from an anonymous woman. In the first call, this woman claimed that Tammy was alive and well and that she would make contact with her family when she was ready. The caller basically told police, "Don't worry, she's okay, she just needs some time." Then, not long after, a second call came from presumably the same woman. And in that one, she said that Tammy was doing what she always wanted, going to school to become a nurse.
What?
Right. Now, this was obviously odd on many levels. For one, Tammy had never expressed any interest in becoming a nurse. In fact, she was actually afraid of blood, according to her mother, so that career path would be extremely out of character. And this led Linda to believe that the calls were bogus.
Yeah, probably.
But Detective Lewis, interestingly, kind of took them to heart. He was quoted as saying, quote, "I have a gut feeling that Tammy just split," end quote. In other words, his instinct was that Tammy left on her own and these calls seemed to confirm that she was out there somewhere. Police were never able to trace those calls or identify the woman. And to this day, we don't know if they were a cruel prank, a friend of Tammy's trying to mislead investigators, or
Tammy herself.
Exactly. From the family's perspective, every moment the police assumed Tammy was a runaway was a moment that was wasted in finding her. Over the years, Linda was very vocal that the Cocoa Beach PD did not do enough early on. She even alleged that Tammy had told her that she was afraid of Keith Roberts. Linda felt that Keith should have been thoroughly interrogated and even considered a suspect in foul play. But police maintained that they did look into Keith and simply found no evidence tying him to wrongdoing. It's one of those situations where something definitely could have been done. They could have searched his car or given him a polygraph, but it just didn't happen. With no trace of Tammy turning up in those critical first weeks, various theories started to emerge, both within law enforcement and among Tammy's family and friends. So let's go through the main theories.
Okay.
Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's revolutionizing how we deal with life's challenges, from sleepless nights to stress-filled days. Mood.com has created an entire line of functional gummies that target specific health concerns with 100% federally legal THC blends. Even better, you can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code ATTWG. If you're like me, then you have different family members who have different ailments, and I've recommended Mood to all of them. I legitimately, before recording this, I told my mom about Mood, and she's going to make her first order. Because they have gummies for all sorts of things, for pain relief, for sleeping, for just improving your mood. Their gummies are specially blended, and each one feels different. The Sleepy Time gummies knock me out in 15 minutes flat with no hangovers, no grogginess, and I wake up feeling amazing. And each gummy is crafted using federally legal cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. Best of all, not only does Mood stand behind everything with an industry-leading 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but, as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code ATTWG. So head to Mood.com, browse their amazing selection of functional gummies, and find the perfect gummy for whatever you're dealing with. And remember to use promo code ATTWG at checkout to save 20% on your first order. The human body is fascinating, but did you know that scientists are now saying that your gut is the cornerstone of your health? It's not just about digestion. The gut affects everything from your energy levels and mood to weight management and even longevity. Most gut supplements contain probiotics or maybe probiotics and prebiotics, but Bioma contains all three essential ingredients that your gut needs: prebiotics, probiotics, and postbiotics. And now you can visit gobioma.com/ATTWG today for an extra 15% off your order. That's GOBIOMA.com/ATTWG and get an extra 15% off. Each ingredient in Bioma is science-backed and third-party tested. You just need two capsules before breakfast to take the guesswork out of feeling your best. Go visit gobioma.com/ATTWG today for an extra 15% off your order. That's GOBIOMA.com/ATTWG to get an extra 15% off. I'm sure a lot of you have heard of Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth, the supplement that helps women maintain optimal hormone levels with over 50,000 glowing reviews from women worldwide and 98% saying they'd recommend it to friends and family. Now, they're taking those results even further by pairing it with a prebiotic collagen protein, which helps restore gut lining integrity, promoting overall hormonal balance. It helps to relieve occasional bloating and gas, reduce sugar cravings, support sustainable weight management, and boost energy. I know I'm not the only one who's struggled with occasional digestive issues and brain fog, but Happy Mammoth is dedicated to making women's lives easier. And that means using only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work for women. Right now, you can try prebiotic collagen protein and Hormone Harmony risk-free and get 15% off your first order with code ATTWG at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use code ATTWG for 15% off today. The first theory is that Tammy ran away to start a new life.
Right. Which I...
You kind of thought, right?
Well, I can definitely see it. There's behaviors and things that she said that would indicate to me that she wanted to disappear for a little while.
And it was essentially the initial police theory. Some investigators, like Detective Lewis, thought that Tammy's erratic behavior was a sign of a mental health crisis and that maybe she voluntarily left to get away from her fears or her problems. The anonymous calls bolstered this idea by suggesting that Tammy was alive and just didn't want to be contacted for the time being. And there were a few reported sightings of Tammy in the years after, but of course none were ever confirmed. The problem, though, with the intentional disappearance theory is that it doesn't really fit Tammy's personality or her habits. Although her personality and her habits had really changed in the year prior to her disappearance. So even right. That's kind of hard to say, you know? Her entire family, you know, of course, has consistently said that she would never do that. And as the years went by with no word from her, the idea that she was out there living happily somewhere kind of became a little harder to believe. Still, some in law enforcement kept the runaway theory on the table for a long time. Even as late as the mid-90s, a Brevard County Sheriff's spokesperson said that some authorities, quote, continue to think that foul play was not involved, end quote, in Tammy's case. Now, the second theory, of course, is that foul play was involved, specifically that Keith Roberts harmed her.
The only issue that I would have with that is the timing.
Yeah.
So we know that he dropped her off outside of the glass building.
Mm-hmm.
She goes and uses a payphone, possibly at the gas station next to this. This is 3:00 in the afternoon.
Right.
So even if he circles back to try and find her, it's the middle of the afternoon, like broad daylight, right?
Yeah.
So, yes, I suppose in theory he could have waited until nightfall, but then how would he have found her? He has no idea where she was going.
Yeah, is he just going to follow her in his car all day? Like,
right. But go ahead. I think that's a little far-fetched, but.
Well, yeah. But, you know, he was the last person to see Tammy. They got into an argument. You know, maybe it escalated into violence. Like, could he have snapped and hurt her and then lie about dropping her off? Like, maybe he didn't actually drop her off. Maybe she just said, hey, let me pull over. I need to make some phone calls.
Yeah.
He waited for her and she willingly got back in the car. And then something happened.
Yeah, certainly a possibility. I mean, either way, I think that he should have been investigated a little bit more.
Oh, 100%. And, you know, so Keith was a known person to Tammy's family. And according to Linda, Tammy was afraid of him. But again, if she was afraid of him, why would she have gone out with him that day in the first place? I don't know. But going back to the supposed drug money laundering scheme, if Tammy had seen something illegal or if she feared someone in her circle, it's possible that Keith could have been involved in that somehow.
So I am curious, do we know anything about this party?
No, nothing.
So perhaps Keith was at this party.
He could have been.
Keith was the one that took her to the party.
He could have been. Absolutely. Now, Keith does appear to have at least like one drug arrest. So he does have some connection to drugs, but nothing that would necessarily indicate that he was involved in some big like drug money laundering scheme. Now, the third theory is basically what Tammy had been saying in the months leading up to her disappearance, that she was killed because of something she knew. And, you know, maybe that didn't have anything to do with Keith. So this is the theory that Linda Curtis firmly believed. So remember, Tammy had told her mother about this laundering operation. She also mentioned that cops, bankers, and other prominent citizens were involved. Tammy implied that knowing about this put her in danger. And so Linda thinks that Tammy might have been eliminated by people who were involved. Basically, you know, she's just saying that, yeah, maybe what Tammy had been saying for the past year was actually true. Now, of course, there is also a little bit of a basis. This is the early 80s in Florida, and there was a ton of drug trafficking going around. Cocaine was booming at the time. That was like the whole point of Scarface.
It was the entire point of Scarface, yes.
And yes, there were also several money laundering investigations going on in the area at that time. So it's not completely impossible that Tammy could have overheard or seen something related to that. Now, if this theory is true, then the likely scenario is that someone Tammy knew, maybe the friend who bragged or an associate of that friend, lured her or ambushed her after she left Keith's car. Unless you believe that Keith is related to this, right?
Right.
Now, you can imagine that if she was truly frightened, she might have agreed to meet someone who promised to help, only to be betrayed. This is obviously all speculative, but Linda felt it was too coincidental that Tammy disappeared, you know, after being paranoid about just this thing happening.
Yeah.
Now, another theory that's not related to any of this is that a serial killer abducted Tammy.
Of course.
Now, the early 80s saw a number of serial killers operating in Florida, so naturally Tammy's case was compared against their patterns. The most prominent of these was Christopher Wilder, who's sometimes called the Beauty Queen Killer.
Mm.
Wilder was an Australian-born serial killer who lived in South Florida. In 1984, the year after Tammy's disappearance, he embarked on a brutal cross-country spree of abducting, raping, and killing young women. His MO was to lure aspiring models by offering photography gigs, which made people immediately think of him in Tammy's case.
Yeah.
After all, she was a model and actress and was exactly the type of girl who he would target. Now, even though his killing spree wasn't known to have started until the next year, one of Wilder's earliest suspected crimes was the abduction of a girl from a mall in Cocoa Beach in 1983. Which is the town and the year that Tammy went missing from.
Yeah.
Wilder wasn't caught for anything then, but once his 1984 spree was identified, people retroactively linked him to earlier disappearances in Florida. Now, Linda Curtis initially latched on to Wilder as a possible culprit. She even claimed that Wilder had met Tammy on the set of Spring Break in 1982.
Interesting.
Linda said that a man resembling him visited her modeling agency multiple times in 1983 looking for models. Now, of course, we don't know if it was actually Wilder, but that's what Linda said she believed. Linda even filed a $1 million wrongful death lawsuit against Wilder, accusing him of abducting and likely killing Tammy. However, after Wilder was killed in a police shootout in 1984, she dropped the lawsuit. She later admitted that she never truly thought that Wilder was the person who took Tammy. She was just desperate and hoped that by suing, she might get leads or force information out. But in the end, police couldn't link Wilder to Tammy. His crime spree was well documented once it ended, and none of the known evidence tied him to Tammy's case. Another serial predator that came up was John Brennan Crutchley, known as the Vampire Rapist. He was a convicted kidnapper slash rapist in Brevard County who, in 1985, abducted a woman, assaulted her, and drained her blood.
Jesus.
Crutchley was suspected in as many as 30 women's murders. He had moved to Brevard County in 1983, shortly before Tammy disappeared. Naturally, when he was arrested in 85, police looked at him for any unsolved cases, including Tammy's. But ultimately, the Brevard County Sheriff's Department stated that Crutchley is not a suspect in her disappearance. They never found any link, and he died by suicide in prison in 2002.
See, the only problem that I have with the serial killer aspect is it's a huge coincidence that if a serial killer did kill Tammy, that all of this stuff beforehand was also going on.
And you didn't know, have anything to do with anything.
Didn't have anything
right?
to do with it.
Yeah, and I've said many times on the show, I do believe in coincidences, but that's a little
far-fetched, right?
Yeah, right. I cannot believe that she spent a year being completely paranoid that somebody's going to kill her, and it's related to some, like, drug trafficking, money laundering scheme, and then it's just a random serial killer going after models.
Right.
Like, I can't. Yeah.
I don't buy that.
Yeah.
Personally, I think it was probably a mix of several of these theories. Like,
well, hold on, I'm not done yet.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So wait, right. I've got another one. Because there have been rumors of something else entirely, like an accident or amnesia. Some people wondered if Tammy might have been pregnant and perhaps died from complications or a back alley abortion. Now, this came up because there was a rumor that she was 3 months pregnant when she vanished. However, no evidence ever surfaced to confirm a pregnancy, and it remains an anecdote from the family that is unverified.
Her family?
Yeah. So I haven't talked about her older sister yet, but I'll get into her in a little bit. But apparently this came from like a post that her sister had made on something somewhere on the internet that says that Tammy might have been pregnant when she disappeared. Hmm. And, you know, she asked to borrow $300. Like,
sure.
Who knows, you know?
Yeah.
Now, over the years, there were also a few tips that Tammy might be living with amnesia somewhere. Now, none of the tips panned out, but just because they didn't turn into anything, to me, doesn't mean that we can rule them out completely. I think it's very possible that Tammy didn't meet with foul play, at least not on July 6, 1983. I think that she could have had a psychotic break and took off completely of her own volition. And maybe she did have amnesia, or maybe she didn't. Maybe she was just convinced that she couldn't go home or whatever, that she had to leave. And so this is kind of like the theory of her running away to start a new life, but I don't think it was necessarily like a decision that she made. You know, like I don't think that it was necessarily the plan that she had when she set out that morning.
Right.
If you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
Perhaps she had a psychotic break, did take off, and then eventually became homeless and just kind of disappeared that way.
Yeah. I mean, that's believable.
That was kind of what I was leaning toward. That her disappearance was absolutely related to the fears that she had had over the past year, but not necessarily that the fear was real, that not necessarily somebody was coming to kill her. I think that it's possible that something did happen at the party, perhaps an assault, perhaps something involving drugs, and that triggered something within her mentally. And we saw that kind of bear out over the next year.
I think something happened to her at the party.
Well, that's what I mean. I think that maybe she was assaulted at the party.
Yes.
Maybe she was drugged at the party. Yes. Maybe both.
I think that she was drugged and raped.
Yeah, I think that's very much a possibility. And that's why she changed so much and was withdrawn and sullen and all of that when she came back.
Mm-hmm.
And that it also triggered a mental break, basically.
Yeah.
And that everything we saw for the next year was just the fallout from what happened to her at that party, not necessarily what she saw or what she overheard or whatever.
Yeah, totally.
So, I mean, that's my general theory. Like, I don't know. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, I completely agree with that. I think something did happen directly to her, not necessarily her seeing somebody get murdered or raped.
Yeah.
And that was triggering all the erratic behavior. I think that it did trigger some sort of psychotic break. And maybe the person that did this to her at the party was somebody that was connected, which is why in her mind and when she had those episodes, she was saying things about him being somebody of importance or you know, whatever. And that spurred on the paranoia, thinking that whoever this important person was that had raped her and drugged her or assaulted her or whatever had connections and was following her.
That's interesting, because I haven't even really given any thought to like who could have done it,
mm-hmm.
you know, but I think that does make a lot of sense. And it makes sense. You know, listen, there are a lot of reasons why somebody wouldn't report an assault.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, 100 million reasons.
Yeah,
why.
No, I wasn't even going down that road.
No,
yeah.
but that person was either important or connected to something nefarious, I mean, those are two very good reasons right there.
Yeah.
Right? And so I think that does make a lot of sense. And I just hadn't thought of that at all.
Now, what happened to her afterwards is what I'm a little unsure
of. Yeah, yeah.
You know, I don't buy the serial killer
No, that theory. Neither do I, because to me, it's just too much of a coincidence. Yes, it is very weird that they were so close, that they were kind of in the same orbit as her.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't buy it.
But I'm not entirely sure that I completely buy into her having a psychotic break and then amnesia and then disappearing. You know,
right. And that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't know that it was amnesia.
Right.
I just think it was maybe more of she just thought she couldn't go home. But you would think that after some amount of time would go by that maybe that would change.
But maybe her episodes got worse and worse.
Exactly. Maybe they got worse and worse. Or maybe she did meet with foul play in an unrelated event later on, which, you know, I mean, and I don't mean anything like a serial killer. I mean, just run of the mill, like when you're living on the streets, just bad shit happens sometimes.
Yeah.
Kind of way. And that maybe she ended up in a completely different state. And again, this is the early 80s. You know, we didn't have NamUs. We didn't have the DNA Doe Network. Like, there were a lot of unidentified bodies around. And yes, now, today, with technology, like, we're still identifying people from back then and even older, you know? So I think she very well could be out there, not alive right now, and just nobody knows that it's her.
Or she could have followed through on her plan to disappear, and she started a new life and is still in hiding.
Yeah, and just not interested in any of it. And letting anybody know about her, and is just living her new life and completely put her past behind her. Because she'd only be 60 right now.
Yeah.
It's not like she would be incredibly old or anything like that.
Right. And if you think, like, she got away, she was, whatever, in hiding somewhere. I mean, who's to say she didn't meet somebody and start her own family and just go with that? Because, you know, yeah, I guess she has a sister, but, like, it's not like she had, you know, a husband and kids
siblings,
that she ran out on, you know?
Right.
So, I don't know. I mean, that's certainly a possibility, too.
Yeah. But do you see why I said at the beginning that, like, I do have a theory, but I could be easily swayed? Because I just think there are so many different possibilities as to what happened to her. That, like, this isn't a situation where I'm like, oh, no, come on. There's one thing that could have happened to her. We all know what it is. Like,
yeah,
is not that story.
I'm not even sold that Keith really had anything to do with this, you know.
Yeah. Despite
his
being shady.
Yeah, I mean, he was also a 20-year-old kid that probably just didn't want to talk to the cops.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
So I don't know. There's a tremendous amount of possibilities of where she could have gone.
Throughout the years, Tammy's mother, Linda, continued to search for answers in her daughter's disappearance. Sadly, she passed away on October 5th, 1995, at the age of 54.
Oh, that's young.
Yeah, without ever learning what happened to Tammy. An article after her death said that she died without an answer to the mystery of her missing daughter. Now, and again, I think she had cancer, she had heart failure, she had, like, all sorts of things happening, and I think she had been sick for a while, and so that's why I was, like, questioning whether she was even driving at that point,
right,
or, you know, what it was. She was on the Unsolved Mysteries episode, and she looked like she was in relatively good health at that point, but, you know, who can say?
Right.
Her mom dying 12 years after Tammy's disappearance really kind of makes me think that, you know, if she did choose to leave, I feel like with her mother dead, because that was, like, her closest family.
Oh, it solidifies that she wouldn't come back.
You think so? You think she wouldn't just, like, pop her head out and be like, okay, well, I'm here, I'm okay. Like, don't worry about me. Everybody just leave me alone.
No, I think the exact opposite.
Really?
If you think
that now that her mom says, she's like, well, there's nothing.
Now I have no reason to come out of hiding or go back and say I'm fine.
Yeah.
Especially after 12 years, you know, she had probably started a new life, if that's what happened, of course.
Well, since Linda's death, Tammy's case has largely been championed by her older sister, Suzanne. Suzanne created online pages and forums, even back in the early days of the internet, to keep Tammy's story alive. She ran a website and now a Facebook page titled My Missing Sister Tammy Leppert, where she shares memories and pleads for information. In one post, she wrote, quote, "Please help me find out what happened to my sister. Is she alive or dead? I just want to know," end quote. That simple plea encapsulates what Tammy's family and so many other families of long-term missing people have wanted all along. Not revenge, not necessarily even prosecution, just the truth. And, you know, we kind of talked about this a little bit before, but what gives me a little bit of hope in this case is modern technology. All it takes is one hit in a DNA database or one person with knowledge deciding to speak up. We've seen several cases as old as Tammy's or older that have been solved in recent years through genetic genealogy. There's no known crime scene DNA here or anything like that, but if Tammy's remains are out there unidentified, there's a chance that they could be matched to her someday with a DNA profile that's on file. And again, I don't know if Tammy's DNA profile is on file, but at the very least, we do have her relatives, whether it's her mom or her sister, I'm not sure. But I do know that there is DNA in the national database.
Okay.
So if somebody does pop up, they do have something to test it against. Over the years, every once in a while, a new lead will surface, but then fade. Yet Tammy's siblings and extended family have never given up hope of finding answers. They continue to push for the truth. Even the community in Brevard County remembers her. She's something of a local legend, the beautiful girl who vanished and left a haunting mystery behind. Tammy Lynn Leppert has been missing from Cocoa Beach, Florida since July 6, 1983. She's a white female with blonde hair and hazel eyes. She was last seen wearing a blue denim skirt, a light blue shirt with flower appliques on the shoulders, and flip-flops. She was carrying a gray purse. At the time of her disappearance, she was approximately 5'4" and 105 to 115 pounds. Tammy was 18 when she went missing. She would be 60 today. If you have any information about the disappearance of Tammy Lynn Leppert, please contact the Cocoa Beach Police Department at 321-868-3251. You can see all the sources for this episode along with photos and videos at our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
And be sure to follow us on social, And Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook and at ATTWG Pod on Instagram and TikTok. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It will help new listeners find us. And the more people that listen, the more chances we have of bringing someone home.
And we'll see you here next week for a brand new episode.
See you next week.
And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Ethan Flick. Our research, writing, and editing is done by me, Kona Gallagher. Theme music is The Stork by Ketsa. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.
Hey, you can do it!
Do you ever scroll through your camera roll and think, I should really do something with all of these?
Yeah, same. That's where Chatbooks comes in.
Right now, Chatbooks is offering something we've never done before. 12 monthly mini photo books for just $12, plus free shipping.
That's a full year of printed memories for less than you pay for 1 month of streaming. Go to chatbooks.com/get12 to claim your books now. No stress, no frustrating software. Just pick your photos, and the Chatbooks app does the rest. Printed photos have been proven to boost connection and belonging, and we think everyone deserves that. So what are you waiting for? Go to chatbooks.com/get12. That's chatbooks.com/get12 now, and get 12 monthly mini photo books for $12. But hurry, this deal won't last long.